pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Live and underway, and we all thank you for being here. The story broke yesterday. We haven't had a chance to really dig down on what the NLRB ruling with Dartmouth means. There's the headline. Nobody better anywhere than Amanda Kristovich from Front Office Sports, always one of our favorite guests. And Amanda, we know what happened. The question is, what does it mean? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. What does it mean? I would say a lot of people are saying this means that the NCAA amateurism model is dead. I would posit that it's not quite dead yet, because there will be an appeal. But the NCAA's business model is on life support after this decision. It's very possible that Dartmouth men's basketball players could translate to all Division I private school athletes being considered employees, meaning they get paid salaries, they get workers' compensation, you know, and specifically with this ruling, they get the opportunity to unionize. So, things are not looking good in the NCAA legal office today. I think that's how I'd summarize it.
That's very good. Now, I'm sure the NCAA hacks, or excuse me, their lawyers will come out and talk about all the things that defeated lawyers always talk about. But ultimately, this case is fairly narrow, but explain a little bit on why it could have such far-reaching ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, this case is only about one, team on one Ivy League school, and folks were joking on Twitter, you know, like, it's not like these are the Alabama football players, right? But it's precisely because these players don't get scholarships, no one in the Ivy League does, it's precisely because these players, are not at a big power school that the precedent of them being employees could be extended in my, you know, non-legal, but like, you know, I talk to lawyers pretty often, as I'm sure you can imagine. Opinion is that it could extend really across D1. I really think that this ruling, if it stands, could mean that, if you're a tennis player at UCLA, you could be an employee, right? If you are a basketball player at Georgetown, shout out Georgetown, you could be an employee, right? All across the country, there's a question about D2 and D3, would they be included in this? But I ultimately think that this could be very, very broad sweeping.
And Amanda, there are so many complicated issues out there, and you've been in the courtrooms because we've talked to you outside of them often. Explain what the map looks like for the NCAA. This one has gone haywire. There are many others that may be more important.
Yeah. So the one that we spoke about a couple weeks ago is another NLRB case, which is in Los Angeles. It's a little bit different, and it would actually allow public school athletes and private school athletes to be employees. And just like a quick note there, the caveat that I would make is, even though legally this only applies to private school athletes, kind of like with NIL, the NCAA would have to change its rules for everyone, obviously, right? So that USC case is going to take another several months, I think, to decide. It still has a couple months to even finish the trial. There is a federal case called Johnson v. NCAA, which is in the Pennsylvania area. We've been waiting for almost a year now in a ruling, just like sort of an intermediary ruling about whether or not athletes could be considered employees, and that's all D1 athletes. So that's kind of winding through the court. Of course, we have Tennessee. That isn't a lawsuit that talks about players being employees specifically, but as I'm sure, you know, we've all learned, if you can't restrict players from using NIL as pay for play, they're kind of de facto employees, right? You know, there are actually a couple others too that are a bit in the earlier stages. The House case, also in California, which is about NIL, but is the case that could bankrupt the NCAA. You know, I feel like I'm just throwing at you my long list of lawsuits that I cover, which every day gets longer. But I really think that this Dartmouth one could be it, if, you know, if the decision stands.
Amanda, you mentioned the Tennessee case, different, but in the folks that you are talking to on a daily basis, what are they saying about that one?
So I think what is going to be really remarkable about the Tennessee case is that in the immediacy, right? Like, let's put aside the future of college sports. Let's just talk about the next, you know, 6 months, right? Next Tuesday, there is going to be a hearing in that case where a judge will hand down a ruling about whether or not the NCAA can enforce its NIL restrictions for a period of a preliminary injunction, which means between then and a trial. And as we're learning, trials, you know, it can take like up to 6 months to a year for there to be a trial, right? And that's what happened with the transfer portal case. So forget the future, the long term of college sports. The next season could be pay for play if that injunction is granted. And by the way, I have my email up behind me because there is a temporary restraining order that could come down, which is essentially saying the same thing. It's just between now and Tuesday. So for the next 6 days, we could have pay for play too.
Amanda, let me get to the other story, and there's no shortage. And this one, a little more subtle, but may have a lot of bite. And that was the just statement out the other day from the SEC and the Big Ten. They're forming an advisory committee, kind of thing that you check on whether you know, maybe whether the light should go off at 8 o'clock or 8:30 at the public library. It's a little bit more important than that, isn't it?
Doesn't it kind of sound like they're creating an alliance?
It does.
But unlike the last alliance, this one actually makes sense. I don't think that this, Alliance 2.0, you could call it, is going to keep them from, you know, fighting for the number one and number two spot, you know, as the college football, college sports duopoly, as I like to call it. But I do think that they are going to be able to get together and essentially make decisions about what the future of the power conferences could be. I've seen discussion about, and I literally just got a notification about Tennessee as we're talking right now, but I haven't opened it yet. So the Big Ten and the SEC, you know, they could strong arm the rest of the power conferences, and they, you know, with the House case, for example, and say, we want to settle, we want to pay the players, we don't want to be part of the NCAA, right? Can I just note, this isn't really
part
of your question.
Actually, we have it here.
Great.
The Tennessee judge has denied the temporary restraining order in the NIL case. So I'll let you interpret that.
Okay, so denying the temporary restraining order means that the status quo will continue until at least Tuesday. So that means that the NCAA can continue to enforce its rules, to restrict them, until Tuesday. There will be the hearing, and then the decision in the hearing is going to be, you know, what is going to be the status quo until a trial. So I'm kind of surprised that they denied that. Huh.
Yeah. Well, we are seeing a headline and not the, I'm not going to try to speak for the judge. I mean, maybe the judge just stayed it until next week and said, let's have the hearing. But it probably really won't matter, will it?
I think that in my limited experience covering TROs, usually like the TRO is granted. I'm thinking about, you know, the Pac-12 situation, right? The TRO was granted, the transfer portal situation, TRO was granted. And that was a precursor for the preliminary injunction, for the longer, you know, stipulation. But I mean, it's possible, I'll have to read and get back to you, but it's possible that they just didn't want to like throw college sports into such disarray for 6 days. They wanted to at least give them several months.
Yeah, we're disappointed they didn't. It would have been a far more interesting conclusion to this conversation. Amanda, if you hear anything more on that, and again, we're just reading headlines right now. We're not chiseling down to the meat like you are. Let us know, and we'll have an addendum to this conversation. Thank you very, very much for staying with us as news breaks.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Amanda Krstovich joining us. From front office, Amanda Krstovich joining us, and all we know is on. And by the way, there's a hearing next week. I'm not going to try to speak because I haven't really read the case, but the judge may not have simply found the urgency to do this before the actual hearing, which to me sounds like a smart judge. What do I know sitting up here on the bench? We'll take a short break, back with much more.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Come back. There is breaking news as we had during the conversation with Amanda. The court has denied Tennessee and Virginia's appeal for an emergency temporary restraining order. Obviously, it wouldn't be an emergency. That would block the NCAA from enforcing rules. It would have sent absolute chaos into the world of intercollegiate athletics. On the rule, I'm just looking at it very quickly here, based on the ruling that we have been able to ascertain, it reads that the plaintiffs, which is the university, which is the state of Tennessee and the state of Virginia, mainly Tennessee here since this involves them, the plaintiffs have failed to demonstrate at this juncture the requisite irreparable harm for the issuance of a TRO. The failure is not inconsequential. Anyway, long story short, I'll save you the legal reading here, but the proceeding is now set for next Tuesday, I believe, the 13th, is that right? Yeah. It doesn't really, I mean, had they granted it, it would have been an indicator that the NCAA was going to get sideswiped in this case. It doesn't mean they're not going to, it just means that the judge very deliberately decided this can wait till next week. There's no urgent need to blow up intercollegiate athletics just yet. But it is coming. Let's get back to the calls. And Jonathan is up next. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, Paul. First time caller. I had a question about the new Alabama head coach, Kalen DeBoer.
Yes.
I have a lot of schematic unknowns for Mr. DeBoer. From what I've learned of him, he has a great character, and he seems like a great person, and he's going to be a great leader for the team. But from what I understand, he's supposed to be an offensive mastermind, and I don't understand his scheme well enough to know what that's going to look like and why he's considered a mastermind. And on top of that, from what I do understand, he's mostly a pass offense guy, but he had a running back that led the conference in rushing yards. So I don't understand how that works exactly. I just kind of like to hear your
thoughts. Well, I mean, if you go back to what his team did well this year, you mentioned the running backs. He had three elite wide receivers in addition to arguably the best quarterback in the country. And on top of all that, he had one of the best, if not the best, offensive line. So that is a great formula to a high-octane offense. Now, like any offensive scheme, you have to adjust depending on what your personnel has. Now, that didn't stop Bill O'Brien from screwing things up at Alabama. But I don't exactly know what his team's going to look like, and I'm still a little bit fuzzy on some people on his coaching staff, including Ryan Grubb, who was his offensive coordinator in Seattle and is supposed to be the offensive coordinator here. But unless I've missed it, I have not heard that announcement yet. Let's check back with more phone calls here. And Sam is up next. Hello, Sam.
Hey, Paul. So,
hi there.
Quick, I have a few kind of series of questions that kind of lead up to it, but Missouri. Missouri has kind of surprised everyone last year, but still kind of took the bench when it came to just the news and kind of the talk. There was brief mention of them on occasion, but finishing 11-2, second in the SEC, and now as we finally get to see what the next schedules are going to look like, we see that Alabama gets to play them later in the season. And we of course, know that Alabama kind of gets their crap together by – the end of the season and kind of gets all the kinks out, at least they have in the past years. But if Missouri can really kind of keep their momentum and their growth, how do you see that game playing out? And do you think that could be a determining factor late in the season that could possibly hold Alabama out of a 12-team playoff?
Yeah, and Sam, what you said is really critical. It's critical any year. It's more critical this year for this reason. When you have a coaching transition, it's chaos at first because you really don't know exactly. I mean, yeah, you've had the spring, but the spring is very short, and even summer camp is limited. So those first couple of games, you're liable to see some things that you can correct by the time you get to what we're talking about here. So I see that as a sneaky monster game on the schedule. I think it's a big advantage for Alabama to have it at home. The one place you don't want to play after middle of October is Columbia, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I think that Missouri, if I had to guess what media days will look like, you'll see Georgia pick to win. I think Texas will be next, and then you'll have a group of people, including Alabama, Missouri, Ole Miss, LSU. I don't know how it's going to sort out, but we don't know yet because the rosters are still incomplete.
Yeah. And secondly, if you have time for one more question.
Sure.
there is some talk that we could somehow see four SEC teams in the playoffs. And the reasoning behind that everyone was saying is, oh, Texas enters the picture. They're the fourth team that was obviously well enough to be in a 12-team playoff. But that doesn't really factor in the point that they had Texas, as well as they did in the regular season, they weren't playing as many SEC teams.
No.
So their landscape's going to drastically change. And then, of course, that's going to add a lot more losses to other teams and really just hurt other teams from being able to get the better record to be able to appear in that 12th.
And on top of that, Texas has the game at Michigan the second week. And by the way, I think they'll win that game. I think Michigan is going to be a wreck of a team this year, of what they were. So it really, I can't remember. Texas has Georgia at home. I mean, that's going to be that's in late October. Everybody's pointing toward the Alabama game, but that Texas-Georgia game may be the game of the year in the SEC.
Yeah, I saw ESPN come out with their article that was talking about the big games of the year, and they had ranked Alabama and Georgia. And I guess there's kind of the nostalgia over the building rivalry there. But I think Georgia.
But here we have it on the screen Georgia now. I mean, Oklahoma. Texas will be favored. Georgia at home. Texas has a pretty favorable schedule, I think. Now, I do think the A&M game is going to be heightened because of the obvious, but their losses. I mean, I don't see many games they can lose.
So, do you think it could end up ever with a four-team SEC?
I think the easy answer is no, because there's so many variables, and we still have to deal with. I think it's ridiculous, but to let a group of five team in there makes no sense. I know Cincinnati got in there a couple of years ago and they quickly proved they didn't belong. But that hurt that group of five deal hurt. The advantage may be that the Pac-12 is not going to be automatic because there's no such thing as the Pac-12.
Yeah. The interesting thing, there's always going to be one that's like, it's almost like a pity vote that they get put in the college football playoffs and then it puts another team out like Georgia this past year. I mean, did Washington really deserve to be there? I personally don't think so over Georgia. I mean, if you're just kind of looking at the stats and we're looking at the impression that they both made and the fact that Washington almost lost seven games very closely.
No, you're right about that. And Washington was really a good team and they beat everyone other than the final game. Hey, thank you for the call. We head to the break. A lot of breaking news tonight. We'll update all of that right after this.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back and Logan is up next in Alabama. Hey, Logan. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I'm really doing great, man. Great. I really enjoyed the Toby Keith thing. I'm not a fan of his, or I wasn't a fan of his, due mostly to his politics. But, you know, the guy was really talented at what he did. And he had some really great, great songs. And then he did a good job pissing off all the liberals like me. So
by the way, that's a sign of a great country artist
like modern day country artist. Yeah, modern day country.
Well, I think we are in the modern day. Hank Williams is done run off the road.
Hank's already. We know where Hank's at. I didn't know he was sick. Was that a secret or
he had a diagnosis over a year, maybe longer. He had stomach cancer, and I don't want to sound like an oncologist here, but there are many. You don't want any cancer, but you certainly don't want stomach cancer.
Oh man, Yeah, that's rough. I heard that this morning, and it was a shock to me. I didn't know he was sick. So, well, Paul, talked about some sports. What do you think this alliance between the SEC and the Big Ten means? Is it going to mean the end of the NCAA in college football?
No, I think what it really means is that instead of sitting around a table and listening to what smaller conferences have to say, Sankey and the Big Ten are just going to make all the decisions themselves.
Okay. Well, that's about how it should have been.
Yeah, I know he won't. The commissioner probably will be more conciliatory than I am because he's a right. Smart man, and I'm a talk show host. But I mean, there's no reason why the SEC and the Big Ten need to sit around and care what Colorado or Arizona think about anything, because they just don't matter.
Exactly. Or the ACC or anybody
like
that.
Well, I was trying to be nice to the ACC since...
I'll say it for you, Paul. It's okay. I'll say it for you.
Yeah, I mean, we should really let Stanford and California tell Alabama and Texas how college sports should be operated.
Exactly. That just doesn't make any sense. So,
let's make sure the chancellor at Wake Forest gets a vote.
Oh, yeah. That person. They're very important.
Hey, thanks very much, Logan. Good to hear from you. Thank you for the call. Let's check in with Trey, who is in Tuscaloosa.
Bash brother Paul. What's going
yeah,
on, Paul?
I'm right here, ready to bash somebody.
Paul, I got a question for you. What did it take to become a bash brother? Did you have to sit around and smoke a peace pipe and you all of a sudden become anointed a bash brother? Because I think you're the only member of the bash brother
club.
Well,
the problem with being a bash brother where I live is that the state that I live in, marijuana is not legalized like it is in Bash Brotherville.
Okay. I was just wondering how you...
I mean, if it was, I mean, we could just sit on the show and toke like bash... Randy, what do you got in your hand there? Looks like a roach clip to me.
So we got a bash brother, Randy, trying to get involved now.
I got a feeling old Randy. Randy, before Randy, Randy used to work in public television. I imagine that was part of the deal in public television. They just handed you, a nickel bag as you walked in the door every morning.
Well, Paul, I got a question for you.
And a nickel bag and a Joni Mitchell song.
Oh, my God. Serious question for you, and I want you to follow me along here about Calipari. Okay, well, I know it's hard to jump from that to this being serious, but, Paul, my question to you is about Calipari and his job as a coach. Paul, and I coached for years, but especially basketball, and X's and O's, probably in any sport to me, are the easiest part of coaching. I think the hardest part is, you got players of different races, white, blacks, nationalities, and you got to be great at getting these players and other coaches that come in coming together to accomplish one goal. So my question to you is this, because Calipari refused to go to the press conference. Is he not setting a bad example for his young players? Because what if one of the young players decided not to come
listen,
to practice?
Trey, I'm glad you said that. By doing that, it's like – you coaching peewees or Little League or Pop Warner and the loser refusing to shake hands with the winner.
Exactly. So what if a player misses practice? I mean, and the player comes back and says, well, you missed your press conference. Why can't I miss practice? Is that just not setting up? And sometimes, Paul, I think we forget because we sit here and watch these players. They're still young men. They're 18 to 22 years old. I know they don't look at it. But mentally, they're still young men, and I just think he needs to set a better example in today's
well,
day.
By the
so
way,
I wanted to know what you
Trey,
thought.
It's late in the evening to set a better example than what you've already done. Once you do that, the credibility starts to fade away, and it's not even the players; it's the fans who live and die for that program. And I mean, I'm not trying to say the Kentucky fans are better or worse than. But I would argue that the Kentucky fans, their passion for that program is unrelenting and undying. Let's get back to the call here. Which one's that? Oh, Billy D is up next.
Paul, that nickel bag rolled off your mouth just way too easy.
It really did. I'm embarrassed to have admitted that. And I don't know about you, Randy, but where are the munchies, okay?
Doritos, something.
Well, now, Billy D, right? I have grown up to be a boring senior citizen, but when I was young and foolish, I knew what fast food places on the Strip in Knoxville were open till 3 a.m.
Absolutely, man. It was like, what, wings or anything that was like...
I didn't really care, frankly. Did you?
No, not at all. But you know you needed more than just a
nickel bag.
No, I mean,
I had this conversation at home, and my wife looks at me and goes, what were you like? I said, well, you would not have talked to me if you had known me back then. I had shoulder-length hair and a beard and John Lennon glasses.
You weren't sporting the mullet, were you?
No, but I had some major hair back in the day.
Dude, send a picture. Put it out there. My son right now, he's wearing a bandana when he goes to the basketball games, and he saw a picture of me back in like 1985 when I shot my first big wild hog, and right. Ever since, he's been trying to emulate that.
Well, Billy, let me talk to him. I'll straighten him out. I'll tell him the underbelly of running with a fast crowd. And fortunately for me, I got away from it very quickly.
You better quit it. It's what made you. You know that.
Yeah. I got a taste of it, but I said, you know what? That's I don't want to go where they're going. Hey, thank you very much for the call. I just saw a name on our board I have not seen in 3 weeks, so I don't know whether we have to break or not, but we cannot leave this guy on hold. You know who's on hold? Larry is up next.
Hello.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, man. Well, you know my name on hold, Jack. That's what you usually do to me. Why is it any different?
Well, Larry, where have you been for the last 3 weeks?
I told you, I've been sick. You don't care.
Well, Larry, we do care, but we haven't been able to.
I got a heart surgery.
So what happened?
I hate to tell you because you're going to get so many smart-ass remarks.
No, I'm not. Promise.
I got to have my esophagus enlarged.
You have to have your esophagus enlarged? Is that what you said?
Yes, and I don't hear those smart remarks.
Well, you're not going to get any. I don't understand. How do you do that?
That's the smart remarks you get.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's just from acid reflux.
Okay, I understand. Well, that shouldn't be too difficult.
Yeah, right.
The surgeon just sticks his hand down there and stretches it, doesn't he?
The damn family show.
Okay.
Hey. Look now, if you have acid reflux, it damages your esophagus, okay? And then it shrinks. And what you have to do, your food backs up in your esophagus, and it causes you to have all kinds of issues. That's what it is. But, you know, I'm doing better now. They said that doctor told me when she went to cut me with that thing and it bent her blade, she said, "Blue steel, Jack."
That is great.
Yeah. She's good looking too, Paul. She's fine looking. I'm going to tell you something. I'm a stud, baby.
Ain't well, Larry, like I am me. Very happy to hear that you're back. We missed you. I know personally you don't like me anymore, but that's okay. I mean, we did miss you.
Well, I'm going to be calling back now. I'm going to bring some heat.
Okay, well, Larry, we are counting on it. Will you rest that? Now, did you say that's esophagus or esophagus?
I ain't never heard a bunch of down low rods. Where did you get them from, a lunatic town?
Yeah.
You must have went south down there.
Okay, Larry. Hey, yeah, you be well. We're up against a break. Hey, by the way, there is a little bit more on this denial of the TRO up in Tennessee. The judge, this according to Stuart Mandel, who's had a chance to read the complete writing as opposed to looking at three or four words as he's talking like me. Stewart wrote that the judge does not buy the state's argument that there would be irreparable harm if he didn't grant the TRO, but this is the signal that the NCAA is going to lose. The judge writes he is not buying the NCAA's defense of the Sherman Antitrust Act, and he said the NCAA fails to demonstrate how protecting student athletes from potential exploitation is pro-competitive. The social justifications proffered for the NCAA's restraint of trade do not make it any less unlawful. And he quotes the Alston case, which was unanimous against the NCAA with that stinging ruling by Justice Kavanaugh. We'll take a short break. More on that right after this.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back, and what an afternoon this has been already. Let's check in with Handsome Joe.
Roll Tide, roll Paul Feinbaum. You know what? It's good to hear from Larry, and I've got to apologize to Larry, man. I know we ain't heard from him like 3 weeks, and I should have gave him a call or something other just to check on him, Paul. I kind of feel bad about it, but
Well, you know, I made a mistake. I kept calling the local bar, and I forgot he was sick.
Right. But hey, I've been.
By the way, I've been told that the esophagus deal is. I mean, it's important, but it should be an easier thing than other maneuvers.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got a hiatal hernia, so I don't suffer too bad with the acid reflux because I take the Protonix, you know, prescription Protonix.
Okay.
And it's helped me. I take one a day. It's pantoprazole, and it helps me keep me down. I mean, keeps me, you know, from getting acid reflux, throwing up, and all that kind of stuff. So that helps me out. But hey, I got sick Friday, Paul. And finally, my pain got so bad, I went to the hospital. So I ended up having to spend the night in the hospital in Tupelo last night. And got a little bit enlarged spleen and infection in it and stomach infection. Hey, it's painful. And so had me on IV
Joe, what's behind all this? I mean, this is serious stuff.
I have no idea because Friday I was just sitting on the couch and it just, boom, started hurting. So, how it started like that, I wasn't even moving. I don't know because I didn't feel sick, just pain. So,
right.
I don't know. But, hey, what they did helped me out. And I got out of the hospital this morning. I'm best I've felt since Friday. So I'm doing good. Got my prescription filled. So I'm taking that. And, hey, I'm good now. So, but hey, it's good to hear Larry's doing good, Paul. And I do want to say about Toby Keith, man. Man, prayers to his friends and family.
Yeah,
Keith, man.
I was a huge fan, too. That one really got a lot of people today.
It did, Paul, because I don't think there's anybody out there that don't like Toby Keith. And, you know, back in my drinking days, I've done some of his karaoke songs, you know.
What was your – we were talking to one of our people here earlier who's about to do some karaoke. What was your favorite Toby karaoke song?
Probably Red, White, and Blue. And,
yeah,
you know, How Do You Like Me Now is a good one.
I mean, if you're in a bar, how can you not do I Love This Bar?
Right, I Love This Bar. Done that and probably
that
done
is,
that,
that is a really clever song, I think.
Yeah, and you really don't have to do karaoke because once you start that, the whole bar starts in singing. So
Randy's favorite is, because nobody thought Randy was going to make it back in high school. It's How Do You Like Me Now?
Right, How Do You Like Me Now? That's a good one. I've done that one.
Yeah, that's always been, that one's always gotten to me for all the people that said we we would amount to nothing. Now they're watching going, we were right.
Yeah, and I've got, I don't have a lot of CDs, but I've got more Toby Keith CDs than anything. I mean, it's, you know, I like some songs.
What's that song? I heard it today. It's one of my favorites. It's, who's that man? Like, the one about, I'll have to look it up. Where he drives back to his old neighborhood. You know what I'm talking about?
Who's that man? You know, who's that truck? And
yeah, I mean, that is a really chilling song when you, if you've ever been through something like that.
That's a pure country song, that's for sure. I mean, you can, a lot of people can, you know, you don't even have to be in the country to relate to that one. So, you know, a lot of people have experienced that one. It went through divorce.
Yeah, no, that is just a really sad song. Was it the name of the song, Who's That Man? Or I can't remember the name of it. But
yeah, Who's That Man?
Who's That Man? I mean, when he drives up and he said, you know, the guy's in his house, and you know, in my house with my dog. I mean, when you drive you see another man with your dog, that's serious.
That's the bad part. He can be with my ex-wife, because I don't really care about them, but my dog.
It's bad enough to lose your kids, your wife, and your house. But then the guy's got your dog. If I ever have another career, I'm going to be a dog custody attorney. I think there's big money.
Well, see, my ex got my dog. His name was Bama.
I don't. You could have the house, but you're not getting my dog. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.